This is Radio Boston. I'm Jamie Bologna. We're starting our program today outside, from the First Church in Roxbury, where we met city archaeologist Joe Bagley and his team this morning. It's a beautiful 3-acre site lined with blooming trees, green lawns, and an old wooden church on the hill, home of the Unitarian Universalist Urban Ministry, in the heart of the vibrant, thriving neighborhood off of Malcolm X Boulevard. It was once on the outskirts of a Native American village, and Bagley and his team are excavating the site for clues about the people who once lived here and passed through. He shows me a shiny yellow piece of rock, part of an old British musket.
So this is the probably Revolution-era gun flint that's now kind of muddy. It's also a stone tool, ironically. It's a piece of French flint made in France, brought over. Ironically, the British and the Americans both liked the French gun flints the best, so they're both using the same, essentially, weapon against each other.
It looks like a dried-up piece of cheese.
It's a lot like a dried-up piece of cheese. It's got that really nice waxy texture. You can hold it. And so the edge, the straight edge...
Bagley's team is finding a host of artifacts in their digs. Some date back maybe more than 3,000 years from the Massachusetts people.
Well, Joe, do you mind if we just step out of the wind for a bit, chat, and then we can come back and check this
Absolutely,
out, too?
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about the significance of this specific church and this site.
Sure. Yeah. So this is one of the first areas settled by Europeans in the 1630s. And one of the first things that the Puritans did was they built a church. And so here in Roxbury, which was settled in the 1630s, they built a church on this property in 1632. And then they built a second, and then a third, and then a fourth, and now we're at the fifth version of the church that's been here since the 1600s. So that's the
And we know this from the records.
Right. So we have great records of when everything was built. They didn't do us a favor and write down how big everything was or draw a nice map that said here's where each church was. We know the third, fourth, and fifth church are in the same spot, but first and second are hiding somewhere in the yard still. So that's the main reason why it's significant. That also said, it's in a big open 3-acre parcel that's never been developed except for churches. So the ground itself is essentially untouched. And because of that, if there's a native site here, it's still here. There's native sites all over Boston. We have the Massachusetts people here for thousands of years. And this is one of the areas that's left that could still have decent preservation because we just haven't done that much to the land here.
So we were just outside with some folks from your team, and they were digging in a square hole of maybe 2x2. I'm just curious, you've been digging for over a month now. What have you found, and what's the method to your madness in choosing where to dig?
So we dig the site like a gigantic game of battleship. So there's a grid established across the entire site, all measured to one corner of the church. So we spent almost an entire day just measuring out with tape measures and long tapes a grid. We dug a test pit every 10 meters across the entire 3-acre parcel, and those gave us a baseline of where stuff was. Now, you could drive a truck through a 10-meter grid, so we want to go back and dig in between those test pits to make sure we're not missing an entire church, which could easily fit between the test pits that we're digging. The reason why we dig everywhere is because the landscape has changed a little bit, and so sometimes we can't quite see the native sites because they're there, but the landscape looks a little bit different than it did back thousands of years. So the grid kind of gives us a scientific method to just dig everywhere, essentially, and get a sample of the entire property. So we did that for a few weeks, and then we dropped it down to 5 meters, and we've been digging in between our test pits to find out if we can get the edges of the site. So those 10 meters established, one, that we couldn't find anything from the 17th century, which was a big shock to us because there's been active use here for 400 years, but they didn't drop anything apparently for the first 150 of those. But we were able to find native sites all throughout the 3-acre parcel, and now we're trying to establish where's the edges of those sites.
What have you found so far from the native sites?
So everything that we found from the native time period from the Massachusetts people has been what we call flakes. And so flakes are pieces of rock that break off while someone's making a stone tool. So it could be a knife, an arrowhead, a spear. We don't really know what it was. The challenge with flakes is that they're everywhere. If you have a native person, you're going to find the flakes because they're making stone tools all the time. But
And how do you know they're a flake and not
yeah.
just a crumbled New England rock?
Yeah, so the two things. They only use rock that's high in silica, and silica is glass, essentially, because when you hit it, it breaks in a certain way that makes a nice sharp edge, and it makes a predictable break. So it's almost like when you see a BB hole in a window mm-hmm. where you get the cone shape. That's the kind of break that you get in this glass. So they're deliberately seeking out those high silica rocks, which in Boston is a rhyolite, which is mostly found in the Blue Hills region, a little bit in Hingham, and a little bit up by Marblehead. So they're going to those places, collecting those rocks and bringing them here and then napping them, which is what they call when they break the rock down. And when they break them, they have a very certain look. There's a flat end where they hit the rock, and then the rock shatters, and it causes a sloping, this kind of cone shape, and then a nice sharp edge. And because they're technically recent compared to like the glacier, the edges are still very sharp. Mm. And the surrounding rocks that we're getting here in Roxbury, besides the fact that we're on pudding stone, which isn't a rhyolite, the rocks themselves are really rounded. And they're just been smoothed by the glacier and rain over the years. And so we're basically looking at hundreds of rocks in a screen and trying to find the rock that isn't a rock, that's actually an artifact.
How do you know how old some of these things are?
Yeah, that's the big question. So the problem with flakes is that we have the byproduct of making the stone tool, but we don't have the stone tool. And we can date the stone tool, but we can't date the flake. So we have found hundreds of flakes on this site, but we have yet to find the artifact that they were making, or the many artifacts that they were making over time here, that gives us an age to the site. We have a couple of hints, though. One is that we've not found a single piece of native pottery anywhere on the site, and we've dug over 100 pits at this point, so we should have found it if it's here. Native people began making pottery around 3,000 years ago, and the fact that we don't have any pottery hints but doesn't prove that it's probably at least a 3,000-year-old site.
And then moving forward in time, have you found any stuff from the Revolutionary period?
Yeah, so that was one of the ones that we've been a little surprised by. When we dig on Revolutionary-era sites like this church was used as target practice by the British. There were British troops moving around the church during the Revolution. There's supposed to be an encampment nearby. That's such a brief time period, archaeologically speaking, that we almost never find anything from them because there's just not much there, because they're not leaving that much behind over time. That said, we've found two gun flints on the site of the style that was similar to what we found on Boston Common at a British encampment during the Revolution. So it's suggesting that we've got them moving around on the site, the British troops moving around on the site and leaving behind pieces of their weaponry. We have no musket balls or anything like that, but it's kind of surprising to me that we have essentially a blip on the historic radar, like the Revolution, producing more artifacts than 150-year use as a church
wow.
did. And, you know, it's just one of those things that you can't really predict what's in the ground sometimes. So you come in with ideas of what you may find, and then the ground produces what it produces.
And one of the things I love, you tweeted out a picture of a button
yeah.
from a bell-bottom jeans
yeah.
in the 70s.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess some people could argue that's just trash.
Yep.
So where do you draw the line between trash and archaeology?
Archaeology is essentially studying history using people's trash. So as far as I'm concerned, we don't really draw a line. Trash today, trash yesterday, they're all artifacts. We use this stuff to tell stories about people. And for us, it's not about the stuff, it's about the story. And if you're on site today, you're part of that story. If you drop an artifact today, that's part of that history. And so we don't really draw a line in Boston. So the artifacts from the 70s, we treat like the artifacts from the 1670s and from 70 BC. It doesn't matter to us how old it is, because we're here to find out what is the story of this place and what has happened here and what people left behind, what can those things tell us about what's happening on the property, even if it was today.
And why is it important for us to remember and preserve this history?
History that's written down is a fundamentally incomplete story of the past. There's many, many people whose stories are erased from history, whose stories never get recorded from history. And in many ways, archaeology is one of the few ways that we can add those stories back, whether it be people who are minorities and don't have their stories written down because they're not part of the written history, whether it be native people who have been silenced in the past, and we have their oral history today, but we don't have written history from going back that far. So we're working with the native community to get the oral history of the property, but also adding to it the stuff that's left behind. It's kind of an unedited, unwhitewashed reality that we're digging up. And those things are not necessarily going to cure cancer, but they're going to give us information that otherwise isn't recorded. And to me, that's important because anybody's story is important to me. And I want to make sure that everybody who can be recorded in history at least has that opportunity, and archaeology brings that to us.
That's Boston City archaeologist Joe Bagley. Thank you so much for showing us around today.
Thank you for coming out. I appreciate it.
Stay with us. Coming up, attorney Shannon Liss Reardon is mounting a primary challenge to Senator Ed Markey. I'm Jamie Bologna, and this is Radio Boston.